KSIV now presents Encounter, a public service program of Bot Radio Network, dedicated to keeping you informed about the issues that affect your life. Now, here's today's Encounter broadcast.
Summertime. It's a time for lots of things to happen with our families, when we're on vacation, when we're just hanging around the house together on the weekends, the swimming pool, the bike riding, kids are out of school. And I have with me Dr. Robert Kennedy, who is senior emergency pediatrician at St. Louis Children's Hospital and also a professor at Washington University. And we're going to talk today about safety, summer, and your kids. Dr. Kennedy, welcome to this edition of Encounter.
Thank you. Thank you for focusing on this topic.
Wow. I don't know where to start, except, Dr. Kennedy, what are some of the main things, or the major things that you see in your emergency room in the summertime?
Well, I think probably the thing that people think about the most are going to be children that are involved in motor vehicle or car crashes. And what we see are the children that are restrained with seat belts and in booster seats or car seats, depending on their age or their size, are the children that usually come in with just some bumps and bruises, but not life-threatening injuries. And so, yeah, I really want to emphasize to parents how important it is that the children need to be securely fastened in their seat belts or their booster seats or car seats before the car gets started.
Yeah, when you think of car seats when we were little, they didn't have car seats, and how many deaths happened because the car seat wasn't in place. So that is a pretty good tool.
It has made a huge difference. The fatalities from traffic accidents has dropped dramatically as cars have gotten safer, but only if these safety devices are used.
What percentage of car owners do you think use seat belts? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't have specific percentages. I do think my impression is that more and more people are using them routinely. Mm-hmm. What I, do notice as I'm driving down the road with everybody else is when they put up the signs about the fatalities in Missouri this year, they indicate how many were not wearing their seatbelts, and that tends to be in the 60 to 70% range.
Wow.
And so I think it's pretty clear that you're much more likely to be either killed or have a serious injury if you're not restrained, especially if you're ejected from the car.
Car seat, the importance of car seats and how much injury can be avoided. So that's one of the emergencies that you see in the emergency. What's another one, Dr. Kennedy?
Well, I think burns, particularly in the summertime when children are perhaps at home while their parents are working, a little more often than during the school year when they're in school. We see fairly often children that are trying to cook something, the infamous ramen noodles.
The ramen noodles, 10 cents a bag.
Yes. The thing that happens is when they are trying to pull them off the stove and the hot water gets splashed into their laps or onto their face, onto their chest, and the noodles that are there will stick to them and cause some serious burns.
Mm.
So, I think trying to teach your children about safety in the kitchen is very important. Another thing that's related to that would be to make sure that your stove is anchored in the wall behind, because particularly little toddlers that are really beginning to walk and explore sometimes figure out if they pull the oven door down, they can climb up on that and then stand up on that to get to the top of the stove where the pots are. And when they climb on the door, if that stove is not secured, it may tip everything over on.
That really happens, Dr. Kennedy?
Oh, yes. And in a similar sort of fashion, the cabinets, it's a little bit less now where people used to put, the big heavy TV up on the dresser.
Yes.
And the kids would pull the drawers out and climb up to get to the TV and turn the whole thing over on themselves and have some life-threatening injuries. Flat-screen TVs now, fortunately, are not quite so heavy, but these dresser drawers, can be tipped over and cause some serious injuries.
Talking about some of the major things that emergency rooms see, my guest is Dr. Robert Kennedy, Senior Emergency Pediatrician at St. Louis Children's Hospital right here in St. Louis. Dr. Kennedy, I had no idea about the stove or the TV falling off. I never thought about that because I wouldn't even think about letting my kids be around that stuff without being supervised.
Well, the problem, though, I think, is when they're beginning to establish their independence and you may not be home and they've been watching you cook and they figure out, I can do that, you know, and so I think when the parents are there supervising, that is unlikely to happen. But I think the children need to understand some of those dangers, and that's where the parents can teach them, help emphasize, you know, what they can or cannot do while they're not home or if they're not around supervising. Another summertime injury that we see periodically is children wanting to ride on riding lawnmowers. You know, if an adult is mowing the grass and the little child wants to get out there and hop on, and, you know, that seems like a lot of fun. And I think, you know, from the adult perspective, it would be fun to have your young child sitting on your lap riding around with you.
Yeah.
But what can happen is when they hop off and that mower is still going, we occasionally will see children whose feet slip underneath the mower deck and have some very serious injuries to their feet or to their hands if they reach under there and the mower is still going. So when you're out mowing the grass, those young children really should not be out in the yard with you, because the other thing that happens are these mowers can throw rocks and sticks, and, you know, if the child is close enough, it certainly can catch them in the face or the eye and cause them injuries there.
You know, the challenge with violence these days, I'm sure that you see, because of the increase in violence, a lot of injuries due to gun violence in children that you see at the emergency room.
We do see an unnecessary amount of gun violence, unfortunately. And I think of that in sort of three different categories. And, you know, one category is the child finds, the young child finds a gun in the home. You know, many people believe that they need to have protection in their home and that a firearm gives them that protection, and they want to have that very accessible, have it close under their pillow, by their bedstead. The kids know where these guns are. Even when the parents think they've hidden them up in the closet, the kids know where they are. The number of studies have shown that. And the studies have shown, too, that the kids play with these guns when the parents are not home, even though the parents don't think they even know the gun's there. So I believe strongly that the only way to have a gun in the home, particularly with young children, is to have it locked up. You need to have it under in a cabinet under lock and key, or to have a cable lock that prevents it from being able to be fired. Because a study has shown that kids as young as 2, 2.5 can pull the trigger on most handguns.
Wow.
And we have, you know, young children that find a handgun and they play with it like they do on TV, and, you know, they fire it. And you, people have seen in the paper, your listeners, I'm sure, have seen in the paper how periodically we'll have children that have killed each other playing with the handgun. So I think that's one area where if you're going to have a gun in the home, you have to have it under lock and key. If you're going to have it there for safety and you feel like you need to have it for immediate access, then I think the lock boxes that you can quickly unlock with a 5-digit code or 3-digit code or with your fingerprints may be an alternative. Certainly you do not want to leave it where the child can get to it and it be unlocked and loaded. So that's one category where they find the guns. Another category, I think, are the older children that are, and the teenagers, really, that are having distractions into to violent behavior and into, you know, sort of the street life where guns are used in a number of different ways. And I think that is a huge problem for our society, and we need to figure out how to give these teenagers alternatives to have productive activities, have jobs, have, you know, a future. And then the third big category that we don't talk about that actually does impact children, and that is suicide. There are actually more deaths from firearms by suicide than any other cause. And that's because, you know, when you're close and you don't miss and have fatal injuries. It's an increasing problem, I think, has recently been highlighted in the papers. And it's particularly true in middle-aged, older adults, particularly men. But it definitely is a problem in the teenage years as well.
Do you feel like kids aren't able as well today to handle the pressures and challenges of life as they might have been 20 years ago?
You know, I think that's a very difficult question to answer. I think there's certainly a lot of challenges today, but we had challenges too growing up. I think perhaps one of the differences is that if there is a firearm in the home, and you know, the studies suggest that about 40% of our homes have firearms, and it's usually multiple firearms in there. If they're in the home, then, you know, they're going to be accessible, even for teenagers, even if they're locked up.
Too accessible.
Know where the key is. So, you know, and there's no doubt that there's a lot of the social media that I think is putting a different kind of pressure on children.
Dr. Kennedy, would you join me after this break to talk more about some of these issues? And I want people to know more about your exciting life as a doctor.
Certainly.
We'll be right back. I'm Judy Redlich. This is Encounter. I'm Judy Redlich. If you're enjoying Encounter, you can listen to it every day, Monday through Friday, if you live in the greater St. Louis area on KSIV Radio. That's 1320 AM on your dial. If you have a guest suggestion, email me at jredlichspeaks@gmail.com. Browse my website, judyredlich.com, to listen to more of the Encounter shows. I'm Judy Redlich. Welcome back. This is Encounter. I have with me Dr. Robert Kennedy, who is senior emergency pediatrician at St. Louis Children's Hospital. He's also a full-time professor at Washington University. I don't know how he has time to do anything else with family and friends, but we're going to find out in this segment more about his amazing life and some worldwide discoveries that he has made that's changed the medical profession. Dr. Kennedy, welcome back.
Thank you.
We've been talking about some of the major medical things that they've been seeing in the emergency room at St. Louis Children's Hospital. And Dr. Kennedy, we've talked a little bit in our last segment at the end about gun violence, and we talked about suicide. What do you think can be done for people that think suicide is the only alternative? How can we stem that tide and reverse it?
Well, there are people that are far more knowledgeable about that than I am, but I think, you know, probably the first step is recognizing when our children, our teenagers, and it's not just the teenagers, but more of a problem in that age group, are having difficulties. And I think that perhaps our teachers at school may be the ones that recognize it. The parents certainly can recognize it. A lot of times the kids are pretty good at hiding some of this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think we see some patterns that we know that when one child commits suicide, that may be enough to tip other children into being thinking very seriously about suicide. And so rather than sweeping that issue under the rug, I think for parents it can be very helpful to bring that out in the open and talk to their children about that and talk to them about how, you know, it's you may feel desperate, but if you can reach out for help, then you can get past that crisis point, then there are definitely ways that people can be helped. I think there's no question that mental health is something that needs more resources and more availability in our society, and particularly with children. But I think that just simply knowing that somebody cares about you and somebody, you know, is willing to work with you is the first step. And so I think recognizing that it is a problem. I think you can bring in your primary care doctor, pediatrician, family doctor, and that person will be very knowledgeable about what kind of mental health systems there are, what kind of support systems there are in the school and after school. I think that's where the pediatricians really shine, because they know how much of a problem it is. And it's not just a matter of prescribing medications. It's a whole lot more counseling and help and trying to help the school-age child or adolescent feel that there's something worthwhile for living.
Are there any other things that are maybe aren't as serious that you'd like to talk about for 1 minute?
Yeah, I think, you know, putting that sunscreen on before your kids run out into the intense heat of the summer is important. And at the same time, when the mosquitoes are really out, you know, especially early morning and in the evening time, using insect spray or staying covered, even though it's hot. We're seeing more serious illnesses being spread by the mosquitoes, so I think we have to be careful about that. Swimming is always a big summer activity, and I think children need to learn how to swim. That's very important. I think it's dangerous to put their floaties on when they don't know how to swim so that they get a false sense of security and get out into water over their head, and if those floaties slip off, then that certainly can be dangerous. So swim lessons, I think, are very important. Falls, we see a lot of falls off of playground equipment. Probably the one that we see the most that I would encourage people to not have is a trampoline. The American Academy of Pediatrics has actually said that there is no way to make trampolines safe, and so children should not be jumping on them. It's a cause of many of our most serious fractures, and the nets around the trampolines aren't what really prevents those fractures. It's the kids landing incorrectly or in an awkward way on the trampoline. So I encourage parents to think long and hard about not having a trampoline. And then, of course, as a bicyclist, I want kids to wear helmets. You never know, just like seat belts, you never know when you're going to have that crash. And bumps and scrapes and bruises and cuts, we can take care of it pretty easily. But those brain injuries are a lifelong problem.
Tips from Dr. Robert Kennedy, Emergency Room, Children's Hospital. Dr. Kennedy, you've been called the ouchless ER doctor in a recent article in a Washington University magazine. How did you decide to become a doctor? What made you make that choice when you were young?
Well, when I first began back in the early 1980s, being a full-time pediatrician in the emergency department, one of the things I realized was how much crying and screaming and distress there was in the children. And so through the years, I've worked with our anesthesiologists and with various colleagues to look at different ways to minimize the pain and distress. One of the first studies that we did was to develop sedation techniques for reducing fractured arms or cleaning up burns, you know, intensely painful procedures. We compared different medication techniques. And for one other study, we developed a way to deliver nitrous oxide or laughing gas for children that don't need to be completely asleep for something, but have a lot of anxiety particularly. And we worked with our nurses to develop techniques for starting IVs with minimal pain. And these are techniques that I think should be applied in adult emergency departments too, but I think they're especially important in children's emergency care. And I think it's been a very collaborative effort. I think people are attracted to pediatric emergency medicine because they care a lot about the kids, whether they're the nurses or the doctors or the paramedics or respiratory therapists. You know, these are people that are very dedicated to helping kids deal with trials and tribulations. So that's really been a driving force for me in terms of my career, is trying to figure out how to help children get through what we need to do to help them to get better.
Wow. Tell us about your trip to Alaska and how that changed your life.
My brother and I rode our bicycles across country in 1976 from Savannah, Georgia, up to Seattle and down to San Francisco. And that was the first time I'd actually been out west. And we always said we wanted to ride to Alaska after that. And so I went on to medical school, and he went on to the Philippines in the Peace Corps for about 3 years. And when he came back, I had finished my residency here at St. Louis Children's. And he said, you know, this is a good time for me to ride up to Alaska. Do you want to come with me? And shall we do it together again? And, you know, I thought, man, that's a dream that we always had. And they had just created a job for me at the hospital. And I talked to the person that was my supervisor and explained everything. And, you know, he said, well, we'll have it waiting for you when you come back.
And so, wow, amazing.
There was a woman I'd been spending a lot of time with, and she had ridden across Virginia that same summer of 1976. And we'd been riding together here, and I asked her if she'd like to come with us. And she said, sure, if we were married. And so we decided to get married, and that turned out to be our honeymoon, riding to Alaska on our bicycles. And my brother came along with us, and I think because he did, that we're still married. He always sided with her when it came to, shall we push on or shall we stop and rest?
So you and Carol have four children. Two of them are twins. How is it being a father of twins and having such a heavy medical schedule?
Well, my wife gets most of the credit there, of course. It's sort of the traditional approach. But we've been very fortunate to have healthy and, you know, very motivated and very generous children. The twin boys, one of them now is just finishing up his pediatric residency.
Oh, father-son career.
Yeah, he's going to stay out there. And his twin brother is finishing up his PhD in Pittsburgh in biomechanical engineering. And he and his wife and our two granddaughters will be moving back here in August. We're looking forward to that a lot. And our daughter, Julie, is she spent a year over in Africa running a malnutrition research program that one of my colleagues, Mark Maneri, has set up that's really established the World Health Organization approach to severely malnourished children, rescuing them nutritionally. And so she ran that for about a year and realized that she really wanted some clinical skills. So she came back and went to nursing school, and she's a hematology oncology nurse out at Denver Children's now, and thinking hard about going back over to Laos this time and being a nurse educator in Laos at the Children's Hospital there. So a lot of international experience. And then our youngest son always liked to play with tools. I like to do woodworking, and he was my woodworking buddy. And he graduated from University of Tulsa and is working with Hilti, an international tool company. And so he's actually making a living playing with tools, which is pretty exciting for him.
So, Dr. Kennedy, how has Jesus Christ changed your life and helped you be who you are today?
Well, I grew up in a family. My dad was a Presbyterian minister, and my mom was heavily involved in the church, director of Christian education. So we grew up in a very Christian household. And, you know, I think that the basic tenets of Christianity are what guide my life. You know, it's, you know, to be simplified, I guess in many ways, it's sort of the golden rule. You know, do unto others how, you know, you would want to be treated. You know, I see these children that are having, you know, illnesses and injuries, and I think, how can I help them get through that? How can I make their life better? So I think the basic concepts of Christianity is very much oriented towards helping others, and medicine has been a way that has enabled me to have a pretty significant effect, I think.
Dr. Kennedy, thanks so much for being my guest today on Encounter. Dr. Robert Bo Kennedy, Senior Emergency Pediatrician at St. Louis Children's Hospital, has been my guest. Hope you've enjoyed this show as much as I have. Thanks again for joining me. Thank you all. See you next time on Encounter. I'm Judy Redlick.
Encounter is you and the issues, where the facts and opinions make you an informed citizen of St. Louis. Thank you for your participation. Let a friend know about this talk and issues feature of Bot Radio Network and KSIV. Then join us next time for Encounter.